service has continued. In all kinds of disabilities, and very information is in the very hot and very cool Cape Town today. And according to the program, we'll start with the office of the military ombuds, and let's get that presentation. And but I'm sure only in the choose ourselves, more special member. From my right, I've done so far.
Good morning, my name is Dick Mayne and I'm a member of
I'll
do the same and ask our guest from my left to introduce themselves.
I am Edna Fanatis, Chairperson of the Defence Force Service Commission. Thank you.
Manzo Romesa.
Jane April, the Fire General, qualified member of the Defence Force Service Commission.
And I'm Mrs. Mugwate, as a member of the Commission.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Lieutenant General Retired Kimber McCanton, appointed as a military ombudsman.
Good morning. The UN Together, Chief Director of Operations in the Office.
Let's go over there. I know it's Parliament and stuff, but the Commissioner and the Ombuds would like to know this.
Thank you, sir. My name is Balalam Yampan Aikos. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee for Defense.
My name is Hazin Mangan, the researcher for the Corporate Committee on
the National Good morning. I'm Peter Darius. I'm the content advisor for the Corporate Committee on Defense and Military Defense.
Right at the back on my left, it
was...
Yeah,
let's start with the committee. My name is Edwin Wanda,
committee assistant.
My name is Mary Body, the committee. Can you please go to the
back? I'm Chris Bukhari, the rest of the legal professor, the community officer. I'm Chief
Our chairperson is always saying, because of the PMG, which is Parliamentary Monitoring Group, when you read in the newspapers, no one will say, no, I heard from the reliable source. So we know everybody now. There's no reliable source now. Everybody knows everybody. So whoever is reporting, the name must be there. Whatever you're reporting. General Matandima, before you start, honorable members, just introduce yourself, then General Matandima.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is J.J. Kosan, member of the committee. Thank you very much.
Kosan, the boy tells who?
General Matandima.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. We are here to make this presentation. Together with me is Mr. Ndigela, Ms. Gilei, and Mr. Mahalime. We will deal with the presentation during a discussion I have asked Mr. Angela to take the members through this presentation quick and we'll deal with questions after.
Thank you very much, we have tried to build a presentation around the specific requirements that are submitted by the chair for your comments. In particular, we are requested to speak as to the structure of the organization, the mandate, the operations of the office, and the challenge. And the scope you are seeing on the board is meant to address those different aspects. We'll give a brief rest on the mandate, the modus operandi of the office, statistical overview. We'll split the challenges into operational challenges and the aesthetic challenges, and we'll give you a quick conclusion. Chair, I'm sure most of the members of the committee will remember that the idea behind the creation of the mid-Rosewood office was that it should serve as an independent external mechanism to deal with the complaints of the members of the defense force or former members of the defense force. And secondly, to be a place where the members of the public could lodge complaints in the office with regard to the official content of the member of the defense force. There has been a number of deliberations in this house. In the 1996 white paper, which was followed by the 1998 white paper, the business of the Joint Steering Committee of June 1998 reflects that Ukrainians have placed on the agenda of establishing an office of the nation. As a result of all those deliberations, I think the first bill was tabled in 2005, but that bill was later withdrawn. And again in 2011 September, the Ministry of Good Bill as we have it today was introduced again. And as a result of parliamentary processes, the office of the Ministry of Home was officially opened with the promulgation of the Ministry of Home Act in 2012 and with the swearing in of the first South African Ministry of Home National General of Parliament. The office, as you will know, Chair, we initially started our work as far back as 2012. And we have now completed already three phases of the recruitment process, with the last phase having been completed about a couple of weeks ago, which constitutes the fourth phase of the task of the office. Our current capacity now sits at 64, and we are hoping to increase it to just over 61 if all the successful candidates in this phase, they take up the offer that will be made. So in terms of staff complement, that's how we are looking at the moment. Our structure overall provides for 89 posts, but we have only filled about half of them. And we intend to phase in the staffing process over the MTEC and see if we can get to the full capacity. That is the structure of the office that we currently have and approved by the Minister of Defense. On top there, we have the Ministry of Ombuds. In terms of the Act, the Ministry of Ombuds is supposed to be supported by a Deputy Ministry of Ombuds. That post at the moment is still vacant, and I understand that the General is engaging the relevant stakeholders to see to it that the post is filled in good time. Under the two principles, there are two main divisions in the office. What we refer to as corporate operations, what you have on the left. Operations in reality just deals with all the core business of the office. This being the intake and analysis of all the complaints that are submitted. Then there is an investigation section where all the matters that are not capable of error or omission within the office are referred for a full-blown investigation. And again, within there, we will have the legal services, we will have the communication services, and then we will have the research and development. At the moment, the post of investigations are filled, intake and analysis, legal, the deputy legal advisor there has just been introduced in the last day, so we are hoping by the 1st of April we will have those members appointed. Director of communication as part of the last phase of the treatment as well, we are hoping that the director will report by the 1st of April. So will be the R&D, it was part of the last day. On the far right, Chair, we have what we call corporate support, which is essentially the support service to the entire office. You will have the usual components of support like HR, finances, logistics, ICT, policy, strategy and planning, and the research and facility service. That is the overall structure that we currently have in approved by the Now, Chair, maybe we should just go back a little bit and remind ourselves to what was the purpose that this parliament designated in the Act as the main function of the office. The Ministry of Ombuds has empowered the Ministry of Ombuds to investigate complaints lodged by a member regarding his or her conditions of service, a former member regarding his or her conditions of service, a member of the public regarding the official conduct of a member of the Defence Force, or a person acting on behalf of a member. Those are the broad categories of the people who are entitled in terms of the law to file complaints. How do we do our business then on a daily basis? That is basically schematic presentation of the process that we follow. And I don't intend to take the committee through the process because this could be confusing, but it is in the slide that we have. But basically we get complaints in the section called intake, where they are received, recorded, and analyzed in terms of the jurisdiction and the mandate of the office that we have just received. They will be registered and allocated a reference number, a complaint is analyzed to determine whether it's capable of any resolution or not. If it's capable of any resolution, that resolution will be reduced into writing, then the matter will be set, and the file will be closed, and implementation of that resolution will be monitored. But where a matter is not capable of any resolution, in other words, it's a matter that requires an in-depth and full-blown investigation. That file will then be referred to the directorate that referred to as directorate investigation. That's where our investigators are located. They will conduct a full-blown investigation, accept documents that are required for the purpose, interview witnesses that are necessary to analyze the matter. Then they prepare a report with specific recommendations to the minister. Once the minister has then accepted those recommendations, the minister will then instruct the chief of the defense force to issue a card. Then we will check the matter and monitor the implementation of that. And of course, in terms of the law, any member of the public or of the defense force who is not satisfied with the recommendations or the decisions of the Office of the Minister is entitled in law to review our decisions in the High Court. So that option is still available after the whole process is closed. That exception is still unsatisfied with the resolution. And what then are the operational challenges? And Chair, you will appreciate that we've only been in existence for 2 years, now having for a third year come the 14th of May. So these challenges are framed by the experience over the past 2 years. And I think the first challenge you will note that once the office was launched in 2012, there was no staff complement in the office. It was only the Minister of Ombuds one day. But the complaints from members of the Defence Force and the public started flowing in, when there was, in fact, no staff to deal with at time. So we are currently dealing with the caseload that was accumulated in the first year of our existence, that is 2012-2013. Our staffing of the office only started, you know, in February 2013, so there is almost a year's gap in terms of the capacity. So there is that caseload that we are still trying to deal with from that year. The second challenge that we have experienced is that having recruited people from different backgrounds, not necessarily from the Ministry or the Department of Defense Force, we identified the gap that there is a lack of association of the uniqueness of the Ministry staff. So I think the biggest challenge is to orientate the staff that we are recruiting from different departments to understand the culture within the Ministry and why it is important that we should have the channel of command and that everybody observes those channels of command. We do indeed receive a number of complaints where members keep the channel. And we often have to remind people that the office does not exist to replace the command of chat from the channel of command. So we need to just create sensitivity about those issues so that we can all understand the nature of the ministry and how it functions. The third challenge that we let have currently, as you will know with all new organizations, is the absence of a case management system. This problem is not unique to our office. The office is that in existence far better than 1996. But I feel struggling coming up with a fully functional case management system that is able to meet all their needs. And I think that's the challenge we are facing. Being 2 years in existence, we just don't have a fully functional case management system, and as a result, the system that we are using at the moment is minor. that results in a lot of money value added labor, because a lot of work has been done in record cases when food has been done and so on. So that is another challenge we are facing. We are very much linked to the next challenge of a lack of fully functioning ICT capacity. I think in this respect, the challenge that we are facing is that much of our support at the moment comes from the LANGF or the DOD. And the DOD, in terms of its system, has its own choices. And so it sometimes finds that it's difficult to get things in the turnaround time that we expect ourselves, because we have to comply with the systems that they have, the processes that they have, and the approval structure that the Defense Force has. So there is a challenge with that, but there is a serious engagement that is taking place in our office and CISA, and we are hoping to have those resolved very soon, once the necessary agreement has been entered between the two of us. Next. Again, it very much links to the issue of ICT and the issue of budget, the issue of lack of a unique enterprise resources system. As you will know, that the budget that you get at the office is ring-fenced within the DOD budget. It's an appropriation by Parliament, but it is within the DOD budget. And for that reason, unlike other institutions within the defense community, like arms for that get transfer payment, we don't necessarily get transfer payment. As a result, we have to utilize our budget within the DOD systems and structures and process, because that's where it is spent. Of course, we have to, like any other new organization, establish a complaint handling process to analyze complaints easily. There are processes in place at the moment to develop a complaint handling manual within the office that is to guide all the staff to how we should behave with complaints. In our experience and all the outreach programs that we have conducted, we have come to learn that there is still a number of members within the Defense Force staff that are not aware of the role of the negative office and how the office functions. And for that purpose, we are continuing to do a number of other programs in the different military bases or units to educate the members about our role and when do we feature in the processes of the Defense Force. We completed now the Western Cape, we completed the KwaZulu-Natal, we are hoping to complete the Northern Cross, Strong Inclusion of Gauteng in terms of all those outreach programs. Of course, the challenge within the Defense Force itself is the lack of an optimally functioning driven process within the Defense Force. Like I indicated earlier on, we receive a lot of complaints, and in our assessment, some of these complaints are not fully compliant with the DOD process, in the sense that some people skip channels, some people don't even follow the channels directly. And in the investigations that we have done in some instances, we have come to learn that people are frustrated with the process itself within the DOD, hence they jump directly to the office of the Minister of Defense, hoping to find solutions to the process. But we have a relationship that we have established with the Grievance Secretariat to find ways to make sure that grievances that are already there and that have been referred to our offices are expedited so that we can be able to assume jurisdiction and open. The statistical overview here is reflected on the board. I have already referred to the workload that we had in 2012. We received 306 cases in that year. We finalized 104. And I think the backlog we are seeing there, you carried over then 2013. 2013 it was 290. Plus the carry over, it gives you 492. 240 of those were finalized. In the current year, up to the end of the third quarter, 220 cases were received and 215 of them were finalized. And we currently have about 257 active files within the office. In terms of legislative challenges, there is of course the issue of independence and impartiality, and I'm sure the committee member will be aware that the act that governs us directs that we should be an independent office. And we consider independence to be key in ensuring efficiency and effectiveness or the credibility of the institution. The Ombuds independence is one of its main strengths and a source of trust, and as a result, the Ombuds should have both institutional and operational independence. In as much as you appreciate the issue of independence within the Ombuds of state, but we think operationally we should be able to carry out our mandate without any interference. And that even institutionally, we should have our own processes and systems that are independent of the Defense Force. And again, we go back to the issue of the budget. Currently, our budget is reliant within the defense budget. Therefore, funds cannot be managed independently from the Department of Defense. This creates several difficulties. The office is not in complete control of its budget, and it has to comply with and be accountable to the departmental businesses and structures for all resource requirements. And I think that's the issue I thought that's very earlier. The submissions made to the Defense Review of 2011 requested that the Ombud be the accounting authority for the office and further that the office register as a CSM nation to be empty. Those were the input that were made during the consultation process of the Defense Review. But we understand that those provisions have since not made to the final document that was before the House. So we still have to see how we're going to deal with that. The issue of institutional independence, again, here is a matter that was dealt with before this committee and before the House. Your parliamentary unit at the time has raised the issue that Section 9 of the Act places an onerous obligation on the Ministry of Law, and as a result, a suitably qualified and experienced person as the executive officer of the Ministry of Law should be appointed to assist the Ombud subject to his or her direction and supervision the performance of all financial and administrative functions. And indeed, I think the point we are making here is that if we do go that route of the military Ombud becoming the executive authority, Ombud will necessarily need somebody who will be able to execute all those administrative functions and financial functions under him. These significant suggestions speaking to the independence of the Ombud are, however, not all taken part. And I'm sure the members that despite all the discussions that took place in the committee and parliament, and not all the suggestions that the parliamentary unit at the time had made were taken through. As a result of the difficulties experienced as far as the institutional independence of the Ombud is concerned, steps have been embarked upon to address the organizational and other requirements for the registration of the office as a shared experience. There is a process that we are undertaking internally. We've been speaking to Treasury, we've been speaking to Public Service and Administration, and the possibilities of the office being represented in shared experience. But those discussions are still underway, and we will have to see what they take. Section 6 of the Act states that after investigating a complaint, the Ombud must recommend an alternative resolution to the leader. The recommendations would taken in the Act leave the Ombud powerless with regard to their inability to enforce the recommendation. This is proving to be an obstacle in the effectiveness of the Ombud, as once approved by the Minister, the perception exists that the implementation of recommendations is somehow negotiable with the office. And again, it's not a new debate. It's a debate that should place as to whether we should be making recommendations or we should be making binding directives. But I think this House in this wisdom decided that it should be recommendations. But it does create a perception that the recommendations actually are somehow negotiable with the parties that are involved once we currently, there are no mechanisms that exist to have the Department of Defense account for the non-implementation of recommendations. Another mechanism that is sure to guarantee the independence of the office is the capacity to undertake investigations and our own initiative, which currently Section 6 of the Act does not provide. But here we have done some extensive benchmarking on this issue. We have looked at domestic organizations of a similar function as us. We have looked at international organizations like Germany, Amsterdam, and Norway, where there are institutions such as the Ministry of Defense. In those instances, they all have the power to initiate their own investigation. But it's a power that we don't have under our own act. We can only call an act to a complaint or be directed by Minister to conduct a particular act. This power ensures the Ombud who is proactive and who can act or test the issue without having to wait for a complaint to redress wrongs as well as systemic issues which may be inherent in the system. But just emphasize the point that we are required to wait for a complaint. Without a complaint, we don't have the power to go out and investigate what is the process out of it. On a point of conclusion, on a point of information, the office is under a process to draft regulations and the Act. The regulation has already been presented to the Chief State Advisor, and it is hoped to be finalized soon. Despite the challenges highlighted above, we are grateful for the support and cooperation of the FAA and the Air Force DOD. We are confident that the office is fully operational and it can only get better from here. we conclude that one of our favorite quotes from the handbook for home bush institutions from the armed forces. Home bush institutions play a crucial role in ensuring the armed forces operate with integrity and in a manner which is both accountable and transparent. I have been individual complaints as well as through the exploration of thematic and cross-cutting issues. Home bush institutions help prevent human health abuses, eliminate waste and malpractice, and contribute to the overall good governance of the security forces and corps. Chair, I think that that is a short version of the presentation, and we are indeed grateful for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. General Matangima, are you okay?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Any questions or let me get some chances from members. Would you like to engage the ombudsman or would you prefer to take the presentation from the commission? Honourable Maiden.
Chair, I would just need to deal with the military on this and the service commission.
Let
me begin by thanking the military on this and the team for the very good work that they've done, which is reflected on page 1, slide 12 of the presentation. Let me say we completely support the call for the military ombud to be independent, and as military ombud would probably know, we proposed amendments to ensure the military ombud was independent, but those amendments were not supported. It was the specific intention of the legislature that the military ombud not be independent. If we are not able to remedy this in the defence review process, then we will undertake to submit a private member's bill in order to amend the legislation to make the military ombud independent. Let me also say that this presentation with respect does not assist substantially because it deals with process and not substance. The slide on page 12, for example, does not provide a breakdown of the kinds of cavities of complaints that you may receive, which doesn't provide us obviously any insight into the primary categories of complaints that you are dealing with. Also key, Chair, and I'll be 1 minute, are the two reports produced by the military ombud on the situation at the South African Army Infantry Base in Oudtshoorn. Now, we have specifically requested the Minister for a copy of those reports, refused. We've requested the Minister via parliamentary questions to inform us about the recommendations and primary findings in those reports, refused. We've asked this parliamentary committee on two occasions to host a hearing on those two reports, refused. What I can say, General, is I would urge you to, in your consultations with the Minister, to persuade or urge the Minister to provide tables, copies of those reports or redacted copies of those reports in Parliament. Because as long as those reports remain secret, the integrity of your office is, I think, undermined. Chair, just in my question, if we go to page 12 in the statistics, would you, if possible, try to outline the primary categories of complaints which your office are currently dealing with? If that's not possible, perhaps a fuller report in writing, I would be quite satisfied with that. Thank you. But thank you for the good work that you're doing.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'd like to raise the issue of the complaints. If we can have a clear that I do understand that one must exhaust the system that exists with the DOD or DOD and then resort to the military ombud. I'm sitting with literally thousands of complaints, a stack of that. Can I bring it to the military ombud? It was addressed by the department and neither by the military veterans department. I don't receive answers. Things have been handed in over the years. So it's on my desk and it's standing there, and I'm trying to find some resolution and answers to those complaints. Whether it's yes or no, the people can have closure on matters and not attending and hanging in the air. That's unfortunate in this department. That's the one. The one is also on the communication strategy adopted by the military ombuds, Honorable Chair. What does it actually entail and how does it really inform members of the defense and also former members of the defense, which is the military? Because there's also an effective communication and marketing strategy of the Department of Military. Now, we haven't seen how effective that is except on paper. Now, here again, we have another communication strategy. And I'm saying, why is this not dovetailed? They all serve the same cause. Why do we have double expenses for the same strategies that incorporate the complaints and concerns of members? So if that can be addressed and there can be a joint strategy that will promote the department, including the military, to report to the minister in this department. The other one is the issue of, we've raised the issue of ozone ready. I see that the number, the backlog, that's what raising the issue of the criteria of complaints being lodged with the military ombuds. I see that the responses of the military ombuds due to application. And I'm asking the question, for one, if I look at the number, it's very small, and 3257 that's active, and over the 3-year period, I see the thousands who have been on the desk of the military ombuds. So what are exactly the criteria? And is this part of the communication strategy that clearly defines the route a complaint must follow, so that the members, the soldiers, and the former, the military vets, are very clear about where they lodge the actual problem, and when do they actually lodge the actual problem. The turnaround time, I think the military which is not unique in that sense. We all suffer from turnaround time from this department. And it goes on not for 10 days as is required by law that people should respond to requests and give guidance on matters, run into months and months. And even registration that took place 2011, 2012, people have not received any acknowledgement or status of the registration that they actually participated. That was about 20,000 military that was applied. Now, this is pathetic. So the other one I want to raise is we've discussed the independence, the non-transfer, the complications that the department faced. Executing the military ombuds executing his job as it should be, because Hamlet was within a department and actually used his funds set by submitting properly requisitions and whatever statement. I think the other one I want to just come clarify on from the military ombuds, Honorable Chair, is the ombuds might recommend an alternate resolution to the minister after investigating a complaint. Now, what does that actually entail? After investing a complaint, the ombud must recommend an alternate resolution to the minister. I just need clarity on that, what does that actually mean? The issue of the IC, there seems to be a systemic matter in government, paying literally millions of rands for systems that are not effective or people that are not competent to run the job. So we're sitting with ICT systems, which is fundamental to running large organizations and processing large amounts of complaints so that we can have easily track of things. If those systems don't function optimally, it undermines the performance of any department and the service delivery of addressing and resolving those issues. And I'm appealing to departments, please employ very competent people to run those systems. We cannot have people that will compromise the department and affect the image, affect the military vets concern, and they are desperate. I think the military ombuds is put away of this dire situation of our military vets, and the amount of benefits coming out is so slow that we actually spend more money on the administration and the department than what we literally actually spend on the needs of military vets. That is the reality. And that we hope it will be skewed and more money will flow out. 834 million was again allocated for this financial year. And I'd like to see how that is effectively done. So I would like to appeal also, Honorable Chair, that if that is also a concern and we don't find the resolution of the department, how urgently can we address the matter with the Honorable? Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Chair. Presently, I want to agree again with the statement in here that there is a good work done by the Minister. I think we also want to say that they will keep up the good work.
I read it, not like not in my
brother. No, maybe you must call the floor to the English.
You
were
nice.
So, see what I was saying, that it's quite a good work, but the matter that we have to just caution about, being a minister on board looking after this, looking at the complaints, and at the same time having a budget that is being controlled also, poses a bit of a challenge. We may find it very difficult. Some of the complaints are about those people who must requisition the money to the minister on. The request may be that they may have to fast track the process of being separate entity, so that they can be objective in terms of dealing with this case. But my understanding, also I agree that we have to categorize the case so that we can get the nature of the cases that are there and their severity, so that we can do proper oversight. But I don't think that in terms of the presentation, everybody presented the cases that honorable member can take them to minister on board, because there's a command there. So it must go this way and right up to the end. For those that have, I think, I don't know what you will have to do with them. But if there are people inside the department who have cases, they must follow the command system up until they arrive at the ombuds than to run to their parties for assistance.
In all formations to something else.
So we'll welcome the fact that they may present in the form of a written submission, category of cases and other issues that other members have raised, but we want to commend the ombuds to keep up the good work. Thanks.
Okay,
thank you.
Any other questions? Chairperson,
I just want to check in relation to recruitment of staff. During the first train, we are saying your staff members are active before. I want to guarantee on the budget and cost that were available for your section. Did you fill up all the cost or manual goals? What do you say? Hand back to the department or what happened? Because now we're saying space for our staff will be at 89. Can I just get clarity on that? And secondly, we need to get a sense the mechanism in which that we want to apply, maybe to address some of the challenges, particularly when we speak about independence and recommendations vis-a-vis the budget controlled by the department, because that should be, in fact, put categorically, not to cause contradictions within yourself and the department, also not to convert members in such a way that we jump in the guns and try to disturb your programs, your processes that is on the way in dealing with those matters. And lastly, the issue of complaints. I don't think that I can administer your complaints as department or as a session within the department. all the complaints to a member of parliament that I got from the community from elsewhere. I direct them to the right department, to the right person to administer. I can't take out those complaints, and we can't work in that way, whereby the department will get an extra work that is outsourced or is sourced somewhere. It's going to be a problem, and any member maybe including with us must find a way of how to deal with such questions. For instance, my colleague here, Honorable Tessel, has spoken about that. Those issues is not for the departmental, in fact, to work. If the problem must be directed to you, because you know how to handle this problem. Because problems differ in size, within content, and whatever. But if we just administer and file the complaints, it will create some contradictions and problems within your operation. Now, to avoid that, must directly go to the relevant department or relevant administrator, which can address your problem. If maybe you don't know who's responsible for that, you can ask the members of the department or the ombuds to say who's dealing with this, because there are people who are complaining about the furniture. We channel all problems. In fact, I just clarify that it's not your obligation to take what Honorable Kosama filed at home as complaints or whatever challenge is, whatever. Your challenge must belong to you. The complaints must belong to you, not to us. And thanks very much, sir.
General Matan.
Thank you, sir. We will deal with these questions as suggested. All of us are going to participate. The first question is on independence. We included this matter because it is a requirement of the law as a part in parliament. And as far as we are concerned, on our side, we have started a process as indicated. We are consulting Treasury, we are consulting the internal audit office, we are consulting logistics to help us to establish the internal capacity to deal with internal controls. We have invited the CFO of the DOD to come and give us a talk on how to establish this capacity. We are not there yet, but we thought we should include in the presentation because it is a requirement in terms of the Act, and would like to comply. And as indicated by Mr. Ndikela, the difficulty is that our people, when they go for the finance committee, they have to be on the tune like all others. We do not have that thing. We really cannot be compared with, as an example, the effort, which is 95 years old. They are well established, but this is a new office, and we need to build this capacity quickly so that we can deal with the issues that we are required to deal with in terms of the effort. So we are building this capacity to be independent, but it is a well-established process, and we are engaging in the process of doing that. It is not a quick win because at the end of the day, we must be accountable. So that is why we are starting from the bottom to build the capacity to have staff that are qualified to deal with money, logistics requirements. But yes, we will get there one day because we are engaging the Secretary for Defense and the Civil Defense Force to sign an MOU with us to make sure that we cooperate. But as indicated, we are not there yet. All members of this delegation will add one or two on these questions. Then the number two is the process. We dealt with process and not substance. We will give some examples, but we can also give some of these in writing. And we indicated in many presentations that some of these relate to salaries, relate to advances and also allowances. Others relate to promotions that are long overdue. Some members were bypassed, or they feel they were bypassed by the system, and transfers that are not discussed with their members, where the members find themselves having difficulties. Because sometimes, as an example, somebody would have a child who has some disability. It will take him to praise without really consulting and checking whether in which place there would be clinics that would help the individuals or the children, it becomes unfair to those people. So some of those people, I'm just giving some examples of complaints that are normally given, submitted to the office. But we can categorize those in writing and submit to the office, to the committee. As far as the boards that are with the minister, I know that honorable members know that I'm not about the minister. I report to the minister. I would love this report to be given to the committee, because this is our work. As you correctly put it, it will affect the, what is it, not legitimacy, but integrity. I would like this office to be respected. To be respected because we are, if we are given a task, we do that, and then it can be submitted. In terms of the fact, the minister has to report annually after March. But in this case, I will not blame the minister because of the speaking difficulty. Because in 2012, it was just myself. It was next year. So that's why we employed the services of a young lawyer, Mr. Magaga, to help us to deal with those 104 cases. But we're building that capacity. Every year, members will, without a demand, will get those copies from the office of the minister. But we must submit to the minister after going through, because as indicated, we are within the Department of Defense, because our finance is there. So our people go through some of those processes, and they submit. We submit to the minister. From now, from this year, we will be, I think, on our own. So our report will go to the minister and fully prepared for publication, and then normally, annually, we will start having our own report, which can be ruled by any member of the public. But we were building that capacity. And with regard to Othoran, yes, we have submitted the report. I know that as far as that one is concerned, the people of the Defense Force and his people are implementing that one. Some members will be facing a court martial soon. I don't know other reports, but the minister annually is required to do that, and we will help in that process. And then that complaint about the procedure. I think honorable members have helped me quite a lot. If honorable member agrees that we should not have these thousands of complaints directly from members of parliament. We may guide on the process, but the Defense Force has a procedure. There's regulations that are set. I was still in uniform when we had those regulations are still applicable. The people of the Defense Force is amended. Little bit of that, but the process is still going according to the resolutions that we had. And the member will start at unit level. After that, if he is not happy, he goes to information headquarters. After that, he goes to a board that is chaired by a representative of general, okay, which is now CHR. That is the area that he is doing some amendment, because before that, he was not kept informed. There was a loophole according to our discussion, and he's amended that to make sure that he gets to know all the decisions, the recommendations of the court, because that is his point necessarily. So we do not interfere before a member goes through that channel. We do not want to interfere because the same law says I should guard against undermining channels of command. We do not want to undermine that channel. It is only on exceptional cases where we may assume jurisdiction. But we are, in terms of the law of office, we must give that General Crocker a chance to deal with issues before they come to us. I hope that is clear. Because those regulations are still, they are not my regulations, they are the chief's regulations. He deals with those, and then when individuals are not happy with that, then he comes, the individual can apply to us.
Current members of the defense, which follows the command, but those are former members.
Thank you very much. Former members have no channels of command. They come straight to our office. we can check the document that will be added. We have an a toll-free number. Anybody can phone, can fax the document. We will give them the form that they will complete. So anybody, civilians who are outside, or anybody who wants to represent a soldier who is in difficulty, who may be afraid of command channels, if he submitted something, they say, some people think that they will be victimized. So anybody who wants to represent a member, be free to do that. We have a toll-free number in members who would be interested in that. It is 0807-266-283. Anybody can phone this number. They will be guided on how to submit and deal with the issue. The question is, why can't we meet and dovetail all strategies? I think honorable members know that we have, in my case, I have an issue from the Act number 4 of 21, which is separate from the Defense Act. We can consider talking, but in terms of our accountability to you, you must follow our I have a responsibility to you. So it will be perhaps difficult to just club them together. Yes, we report to the same Minister of Defense, but I have a separate mandate. And that is why we are coming up with our own strategy. And as indicated, we have started with outreach programs. I don't know, the Defense Force has been there for some time. They have their own system. Military veterans are not very familiar with that. But I guess it will be very difficult because we account differently and separately. Maybe at some stage, after some discussion and the direction of the minister, we can pull those differences together. Surely there are areas where we can share some experiences. All our people, when they come, I try to expose them to the military, how it works, and also how do they communicate. Our communicators get a week to be, not to be indoctrinated, but because they're going to be dealing with the defense people, they need to know. But we are unable to combine with the state.
Jefferson, I just believe I wanted to make a simple point about the report. The first point is I recognize, and I'm sure the committee recognizes, that the decision to make a report public or not is a decision that lies with the minister, not with the military office. Having said that, General, it may be wise for you to consider in your consultation with the minister going forward when you're dealing with other similar matters. It is possible, at least from the minister's perspective, and I don't know the detail, that there may be aspects in the report which may have relevance to future legal proceedings, which the minister would be reluctant to make public because they may prejudice future legal proceedings. So the minister is in a bind. Would it be wise for you to consider possibly providing the minister with a report and an executive summary of the report which could be made public? I'm just making a suggestion for you to consider going forward.
You may not do investigation.
On the specific investigation that I'm sure that the military army will conduct in investigations of similar nature in the future, it's just simply a modus operandi that I'm proposing. I said I don't need the military army to comment on it. Simply a suggestion.
General. Thank you, sir. When we submit the report to the minister, we give the executive summary. But the minister has a discretion whether to utilize that or not. So far, I know that he's been, after sitting with her legal advisor, if he agrees with us, he will then direct it to implement. But for publication, I have not seen that. But yes, there is an executive summary. And normally, when we submit that, it is after consultation with all parties, as Mr. Ndikela was indicating. We would know if there is unhappiness somewhere, possibility of getting to court. Yes, individuals are free to go to court, but this recommendation, this investigation are actually conducted by some of you who are legally qualified. And after that, I speak with my advisor as well. Mr. Ndigela, as you know, that some of you is legally qualified. But we can't prevent individuals who may be thinking that maybe later they will vote if they are not taking with the problem. The general strategy, as I agree, especially around the computer, the IT, and also some responses. But I don't know what this will improve because of our monthly meetings with the people of the defense. This is an informal arrangement. It's not captured in the text. But in order to assist the process, we thought we should have this arrangement where he gets to know the difficult area, and that will assist the minister as well. So some of these difficulties, which are caused by not by him, but some of the subordinate commands, will improve our income. But the IT one is a challenge. It's a huge challenge which I don't know how to overcome, but we have consulted with we have an agreement now. We have signed with the CEO of CISA to make sure that we have direct liaison with them and cooperation with them and not through CMI. The biggest problem is around CMI. I don't know their difficulties, but CMI is Command Management Information in this department. But after signing this agreement, my IT manager promised me that the things will go well. Can I ask Mr. Ndigela to deal with that?
It may be that the English is my first language. But I think what we wanted to convey is that matters that come to us, in most instances, are matters that have already been considered by the DOD. And a particular position, by the time they get to us, which has already been taken. So in terms of the investigation that we do, we normally recommend an alternative to what the DOD may have taken. So I think that's what we wanted to convey by alternate resolution. Because the DOD would have looked at the matter and decided that you are not promoted. If we find the basis that the person is promoted, we will then recommend a different recommendation from the DOD in terms of what we think of.
Then I should actually read that either you endorse or ratify a resolution of the minister which you agree with and the grounds are good for it. But if there are grounds for alternate, then you of course recognition of alternate. But if one cannot say something, there must be an alternate. Because to provide an alternate may also go contrary then to the regulations. So I think it should be in the instance where there are sufficient grounds for alternate, then the minister will report.
I think the letter of the matter of grammar and English depends what you really want to say, but there is a point. Honorable
Professor, I don't want to live here with an understanding on the publication of the administrative work of the Department of the Ministry of Home. But I want to get a sense that if there are any issues within Ombud that need a publicity, they will be publicized at that moment. But if administrative matters, somebody is going to hearing, publicize, summarize, I really say I don't want to leave this meeting without understanding administration. But the two administrations, that administration will speak to it. When time takes that, you must put something on it. I should think that understanding that I'm using. Yes.
Lawyers, you want an opinion, you employ seven of them, you get 17 on it.
That is just part of the problem.
Sir, there was a question on the budget and whether we return money back due to staffing. Mr. Makalimela will deal with that. We are the Makuluba.
Chairperson, I'm about to take this now for a meeting at the first level. We've been called by speaker. But I would like to share my experience today. The report you are going to get from our commission will be made a trigger for the petition of the ombudsman. The frustrating part is lack of acknowledging correspondence and the quick feedback, right from top to bottom. So, in a situation, if we as a commission are frustrated with that process of reporting back, feedback, meeting timelines, how much more to a small group who is somewhere in. So my advice would be, in future, this committee, you may have to call the leadership of the putting name to say the report back mechanism, whether you write a letter, not anything, just tell you that a lot of people's documents are not current. I'll leave this with the my chapter. This is our recommendation letter to the vote to be selected as the chief of the accounting office, the department of the minister, to say what is the progress on this. Because we advise we submit report. But if there's no acknowledgement at this level, or if there's an acknowledgement, it will come up as or never. This is just the truth. So let us try and make sure that we go back to the basics. Emphasize to the minister and commander that this kind of profession, you need to keep your men informed, you need to respond on time. I think we need to identify this lack of brain. At certain levels in Hamburg, it's different. Then, it's when you say there is no discipline. You mustn't just look at who said this book and not speak. It might well be that a certain level of mind is also not discipline, or they don't have qualifications to run the institution. So it's a challenge which we must face, but if you want to find a solution, you need to try and use a non-partisan approach. Do you politicize it? Ask the minister, in terms of your profession, you are given orders today, you give a timeline, report back. Are you satisfied that you as a minister get the work on time? So it goes down. I just wanted to leave you with that comment. I'm off.
Okay. Thanks, General Minister. We hope the shepherd and the professor will be equal to the task.
Thank you.
That's the nature of General Minister.
Keep it secret.
Otherwise, we'll have a coup there.
Thank you, Chair. In the current financial year, in the HR budget, we will return or will underspend by between 2 million and 2.5 million for a reason that we didn't stop the cost of the deputy military ombudsman and his or her staff. So that is where the underperformance is coming from. Maybe I must add here that going forward, provision has been made in the MSF for all the 89 proposed to be filled. Thank you.
Just before you leave your seat, other main ones to do a question.
Okay, if you could I make a further recommendation given in the light of General Bhattacharya's comments. My understanding is that we will receive a more detailed breakdown in respect of the statistics on containing Table 12, and we'll receive that in writing. My understanding also is that the military onward, unless I'm incorrect, is also experiencing difficulties with response times from the Department of Defense. Is that correct or incorrect? Then could I make a further suggestion, Chair, that in respect of the 257 outstanding complaints that have not been resolved, that the military onward provide us with a table in respect of each complaint, when the letter was submitted to the Chief of the Defense Force, and how long it took him to respond, so that we can get the Chief of the Defence Force or military command in there to explain why they're not able to deal with correspondence. This doesn't come as a surprise to me, Chair. My expectation is that a letter written by a member of Parliament to either the Minister of Defence, the Secretary of Defence, or the Chief of the Command, or the Chief of the Defence Force, has absolutely no prospect of ever being replied to.
No, Chair, I'm defining on that specific aspect. You see, the part of our role here is just to oversight. So to the extent that we need the report, we not need to gather the secrecy when the letter was sent and so on and so forth. We just need to oversight on specific issues. Category of cases, how far are they? There is management that must generally deal with those issues, and you know, our oversight is limited to making sure that these people at the managerial level do their work, they make the necessary follow-up. But for these purposes, we need to know. We can't get all the difficulties, which is the letter was sent on this day, and so on. No. Our must oversight them that they are doing their work, must oversight them that they are following, making proper follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will do the first part. The second part I was going to appeal to you to let me do my work. I have the responsibility to talk to the people of the Defense Force, who will instruct a further action with his subordinate commander. If you were to do that, then you would find yourself doing petty administrative work. It is a challenge, but it is a challenge that I am capable of overcoming, because we have structures in place now. Yes, it can frustrate somebody, but I know it is not because the people have not find a document. It is somewhere my investigators. As a new organization, they get this frustration because some soldiers don't understand. Who is this again now? Why is he talking to us like this until I write a letter to the chief of that particular service? So these are issues that we are able to deal with. Sorry, I omitted to thank the members who said we are doing a good job. I really appreciate that. There must be areas where we can have this like a cattle on the shoulder, but there will be, I have encountered many difficulties where we do not account properly. I expect that. But those who said we do a good job, I'll convey this to the members who are actually involved in the investigation, because what comes to me is after some work by qualified people, a combination of ex-military soldiers, military people, and experienced lawyers. So thank you very, very much for that. I think that is all, Chairperson, if I'm not mistaken. But if I'm mistaken, we have this thing which is here. If I left out something, they will add or you will find.
You know that Sean TV that say about, do you think, what is it? You want to sing? Or what is it? Do you think you can sing? Either of the three judges.
Yeah. Yes.
Others are very good, the other one is really tough.
the tough one. So if you trust, if you get that accolade from honorable miners, just know that you are getting a good job. You are doing a good job. Honorable
Mr. Rao. This point you mentioned, Honorable Chief, is the issue of the regulation. I believe the information is made also by the Chief Special Advisor. When will that be submitted to the committee? So we are handing out the regulation to the Kingdom of Sumba. And I just want to also, just for information purposes, that in the current ARR that we see, the annual report, it's not in there, but in the previous one, the Climate Committee is a higher risk, medium risk. And amongst the risks that were listed there, the medium risk, were actually people, subordinates that are not reporting to the chief officer. So it was noted as a risk factor in the department. And I think I haven't forgotten because those reports are with us, but conveniently, we're only dealing with four high risks in the military veterans issue, and not with those other medium risk issues that were just left out. So it is a risk area, it is something that needs to be addressed, and I think everybody agrees around the table, whether it's from the members of parliament, whether it's the GFSC, whether it's the military members, the department's reporting mechanism is not functioning properly. That is a fundamental flaw and problem with the government.
Thank you. I think we are short on the job. Let me start with the Professor Sanate, Defense Force Training Commission. Thank you very much, General Nancy.
First, should we give that information offline? My legal director is ready to share the information on regulation.
Just
love
to hear the
voice. Thank you, Chair. The regulation is currently in its draft stage as well. I think we're in our first stage of drafting, and we hope to be presenting, we have received yet final responses from the Chief Data Advisor. We're just going through the second stage, the final stage, which is what we would like to do today to the Minister at the Defense Council. So that is where we will be probably in the next month or two, and hopefully it will be finalized and then we'll get to you soon there.
Thanks very much, General and your team. Now we'll get into the chapter 3 of the commission. You are welcome to stay in the state and but you are also free.
I will sit in case there are common problems.
That initially why SSS station really wanted us to do both presentations, but then this majority of us. Okay, Professor.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. On behalf of the Defense Force Service Commission, we would like to express appreciation for the opportunity to be here before you. We have already been introduced to everybody present, so we won't go that way. We are accompanied by our members of the Secretariat for Support and Backup, if you don't mind. And we were requested to report on our structure and work done to date and on our challenges, and we kept to that particular brief in the report that we gave you. There has been some need to modify the report, Jefferson, and we have copies of it, but not far from the original. So I want to ask permission that we either redo that or we can just deal with it as we go from the beginning.
We need to provide a copy.
Thank you. I don't know if so the aim of our presentation, as requested by the Portfolio Committee, as I said, is to present to you on our structure, our work done to date, and challenges. And that is basically what we will deal with now. So, we thought it wise to provide a little bit of a background before we deal with the structure, the work done, and the challenges. We can go back to the time when the then Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Honorable Minister Sisulu, made reference to the establishment of a commission during the Department of Defense budget vote in the National Assembly in Cape Town on the 3rd of July 2009. Now, pursuant to the Minister's budget vote, the Secretariat is asking for permission to know the Minister's budget vote on 3rd of July 2009, the establishment of the Interim Commission was approved by the Cabinet and created by a resolution made by the Minister on 9th September 2009. The Minister further said, in recognition of the distinction between the rest of the public service and the security and intelligence services, legislation has determined that the Labor Relations Act should not be applicable to the Defense Force. This is based on the uniqueness of the Defense Force. And in particular, because we're not represented in the bargaining council. In addition, the Constitution requires us to develop the Defense Force into a disciplined, professional force, precisely because of the role it plays as the last bastion to defend democracy and to protect our territorial sovereignty. Now, so we are of the considered view I am of the considered view that the National Defense Force Service Commission must be established to assist me to deal with these vitally important issues so that our national security is never compromised. This commission will function on an interim basis until a permanent commission is established through legislation. Well, this happened then, that the interim National Defense Force Service was established on 1 October 2009, and they had to advise and make recommendations on a unique service dispensation outside the ambit of the public service in respect of members of the South African National Defense Force. To advise and make recommendations regarding the amendment of the regulatory framework in order to give effect to the unique service dispensation, and also to investigate and provide expert advice and make recommendations regarding the remuneration and conditions of service of members of the South African National Defense Force. Well, time went on and the Permanent Defense Force Service Commission was established in terms of Section 62 of the Defense Amendment Act 22 of 2010. It is mandated in terms of Section 62B(1) of the Act that we are expected to make recommendations annually to the Minister on improvement of salaries and service benefits of members, on policies in respect of conditions of service, and the promotion of measures and standards to ensure the effective and efficient implementation of policies on condition of service within the Defense Force. Now today, nine commissioners were appointed on 10 October 2013 by the current Honorable Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Mapisa Nsapula. We go to the structural position of the DFC. You will see that we simplified the little sketch there to show that we report directly
to the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, and then we've included the block of the DOD to say that we have interactions with the Defence Secretariat and the CNDF. Now, we thought it wise to just give you a simplified sketch on the screen. We thought it wise to give you an update on the commissioner. Unfortunately, we experienced a loss of two commissioners. We have really entered also our work. We had the passing of Lieutenant General Retired Malloy on December 2013. And after the last national elections, we lost Ambassador Ndiwe Zulu, who is now your colleague, the Minister of Small Business. The chairperson is the only full-time member of the commission at this point. We are hopeful that perhaps this can be changed in future. We have also written to the minister to ask her to replace or to appoint three more commissioners and express the desire that such commissioners have legal, HR and medical experiences, because we felt that that would increase the capacity of the commission. Commissioners are appointed either full-time or part-time on a five-year term. We also included for you the structure of the secretariat. We will not go into that in depth, but I want to make a comment or two about this structure. Now that we are in business, we find that that structure does not really help us to fulfill our core business in the manner that we would like it to be done. We find that our work is very research-based, as benchmark, as to review policies. And if you look at the level of the appointment, you will see that we have mostly support people who help us with procurement type of issues. And then the researchers, currently there are only two. Now we have about 21 for conditions of service at least according to the Act. And each one of those things, you as we visited the basis, you realize there's a need to research these things. If we want to deliver quality work, two resources cannot do the work alone. So this is a problem for us at present. What I can inform the committee is that I have started the process with Jim in the SANDF to relook our structure, and we are having consultations as to what would be a workable structure for the commission. To empower us fully. So that process is taking place as we speak. We also have to point out to you that the process of filling these positions took a long time. It's part of the DOD process that we have to follow. So our head of secretariat only came on board in February. The rest of the staff came on board in June, July. And five of our 19 posts became unfunded during the 2014-15 financial year. We are hopeful that we could fill this post in the new year. And we also had a loss of two members to the secretariat. One who passed away and one who went on for green party. Now, in terms of work done today, we have, in terms of the Act, gazetted the recommendations on cost of living adjustment for members of the South African National Defence Force for the financial year 2014-15. And we've included there the number and the. Also, the policy on awarding of death benefits of beneficiaries of members, employees who pass away while deployed on an internal or external operation for which no international compensation is paid. And then I'm happy to report to this committee that we had our regulations passed and gazetted. We feel very good about that accomplishment, but if you compare it to the regulations that the Interim Defence Civil Service Commission put together, you will find that our one is very watered down, and that is a problem to our military leaders. But we could not move outside of the, what the Act would allow. So we had to take out all the chiefs, so to say, because it wasn't really in the Act. In terms of the Act also, we have formed three committees to address the issues that the mandate expects of this commission. So we have a Pay and Service Benefits Committee, we have a Conditions of Service Review Committee, and we have a Policy Review Committee. Of the three committees, we're struggling a little bit with the Policy Review Committee, but the other two committees, I would say, are functioning really well. The Commission has held 8 plenary meetings and 4 committee meetings, in terms of also what we need to do. We have submitted reports to ministers, so the annual report then, after our base visit, we sent consultative reports to the minister on the findings that we do when we do visit the bases, and we have also submitted the first quarterly report on conditions of service. My two commissioners, fellow commissioners here, are very active in the committee meeting, and with the permission of the chair, should questions arise around their committee, if they can prioritize, appreciate it. We have also done 4 quarterly reports in the 2013-14 financial year and 2 in the 2014-15 financial year. We have given you a list of all the units and bases that we have been able to visit. Now, normally we go on a 2-day visit. We see all the rank groups. We start with the command group, and then we see them in recognition of the hierarchical nature of the defense force. If you mix the ranks, they will not up in front of their team. So it takes us 2 days. And I must say, at the end of our 2 days, we find a new spirit on the base, to the point where we have to caution them that we only have advisory power, so as not to create false expectations as to what the commission can do. In terms of the Act, we have to consult stakeholders. We've included the list of the stakeholders as well. Now, when we deal with the stakeholders, for instance, we depend heavily on the defense force to give us briefings on the matters that we find when we go to the bases. We've also embarked on benchmarking visits. The interim has visited a number of countries. Our current minister really wanted the commission also to focus on the African continent. So we started to look at Botswana, Tanzania, and we would have been in Namibia if I see today, but we will now go to them 15th to 19th of March. The specific focus of these benchmarking visits will be to look at the issue of delinking rank from salary. In the process, we also look at other issues of service and service benefits and remuneration. We have found on these benchmarking visits that even though those are the goals of the visit, we learn much more than that. We have brought up the issue of the OFG. We find everywhere that is still an issue that causes concern among members, especially the university educators and the health professionals. The minister introduced a medical task team, and we have worked closely with them to address all the issues that was covered in the media so extensively. Minister has now asked the sector to take over the process of the report, and a meeting was held with three different committees were formed. The commission, various members of the commission and secretariat will work also along with these committees to continue to monitor the process. And of course we had we had to set up offices and the staffing, and through that we could get a good sense of why members are sometimes frustrated with the process of the defense. Now that brings me to the issue of transformation, and I would like to put on the record here that how standard transformation, it is not just about social identity, it is also about issues of processes and structures, and so we see a need for a big need for transformation in terms of that within the defense. Now, in terms of a challenge, the military ombuds addressed very well the issue of independence. We find that the fact that we are in an advisory structure doesn't give us any right to implement or to insist on the implementation of recommendations. So we can only recommend to the minister. But what we find when we come onto the basis, people challenge us. The members challenge, what guarantee can you give us that you're going to make it if we can't implement? We have also been able to establish that some of the recurring challenges relate to budgetary constraints within the defense force, and as I said before, we feel that there's even need for some of the processes and systems within the system to be trained in the SMBS. Now, in the light of the recommendations that they have made to minister, in the light of what we find on the basis, we found that we basically find the same things that the interim commission found, and that report is before was sent to the previous portfolio committee. Last year we were asked to report on these 17 recommendations. What were the progress for them? We must say to you, we have kept on requesting for briefings on those recommendations because we find that it is so as important as it was then, it is as important today. And the turnaround is closed. They have been some progress in some areas, but in other areas, like with the military veteran bill, we find that that bill, the last time when they had to appear before us, was still 600 pages long. And our position is that this bill was too long to be put before Parliament. So I think, we also have to report to you that the military command structure is not happy with our regulations. They find it is without chief, and we have reported that to the military, after the minister. So what we intend to do about that is to work with our legal division and to see what we can recommend as amendments, perhaps to the Act, to the Defense Act, to empower the commission. I think at this point, that is what my presentation will be, Chair Wilson.
Thanks, Maya.
Thank you, Chair. Can I again begin by thanking the Defence Force Review Commission for the good work that they are doing in the under quite difficult circumstances which they have brought to our attention during the course of today. However, if you would just revisit your consultative meeting and perhaps take us through the, if you like, the primary, shall I call them, challenges experienced on the debate, the general challenges or themes that emerge, which obviously we need to deal with. I think that would give the committee some significant insight into not only your work, but the challenges facing the Living Board. So that's the first question. The second question concerns something specific, and that is whether the problems experienced by civilian finance officials who claim to have lost significant benefits as a result of the transition, whether that is a matter that has come to your attention and whether you are pleased with that matter, and if so, how. Then finally, I wonder if you could just touch on the hot issue raised by your colleague, General Bajoli. I mean, it's clear, Chair, that there's a problem. The Secretary of Defense is evidently, based on that dossier, not responding promptly to correspondence from the Commission. I wonder if you could just set out those further particulars, because the Committee will obviously have to take action. Thank you.
Yeah, it's, I would also like to commend the Commission for good work done. But mine is mainly on the advice that they may have to fast track the issue of looking at the organizational trust. So that whoever must take decisions must be who to take the decision quick. It is also my considered view that even the nature of work, we may have to make sure that additional commissioners have to be full-time to prosecute this work. And I just really look at the structure of the secretariat. I think it just needs an overhaul. And would appreciate if maybe next time when we meet, we're given a proposal structure so that we can have our own input in terms of improving the structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And I should also reiterate thanks to the fellow members who did as well. But certainly the Defence Service Commission is doing excellent work, and it's very important work in terms of what we expect from soldiers in defending the country. And I think we appreciate those inputs to improve those conditions of service. And of course, our own personal visits at committee and on-site visits where we actually witness and saw the conditions of service and even the hospital facilities where they stay, the accommodation, the conditions of the medicines that they eat, even of the food that they eat, to see what type of food they actually get. I think from the committee there were recommendations made. But also going into the future committee visits, two bases, the report by the DFC could serve as a very informative guiding algorithm where there are problem areas that need to be improved. And I think we have been trained previously the interim defense for service commission and received two of the reports. That's why we know of 17 conditions of service, and we requested last time a dashboard to check the progress that's been made on every particular condition of service. Now, that we'd like to see an update, because I'm sure that the permanent commission is not going to reinvent the wheel. They've done the same amount of work that is in the commission. But it's rolling on to those things and improving on it. So if the ultimate can be a friend, I would appreciate it very much. And also if we can receive the first quarter report. We have the two reports of the Inter-Ministerial Defense Commission, but we need the current permanent Defense Service Commission's report, and when will that actually be tabled for us. The report of the different issues, I think that it will be extremely helpful. I think there was a request, there were issues in the military hospital, and that report was also requested some time back, and it was not forthcoming. And I think it's very important for the committee in exercising oversight. We need to get to the bottom of the problem. Wherever there's matters that have some legal implications or disciplinary issues, we need to be informed in the face of it. We don't want to know the specific detail when it is still in progress. That is not our concern. And I think we need to know what progress is made, because we visited the military hospital and there are problems at the military hospital. I mean, military one was one of the big problems for the former president. Mandela, oh, we know about the case and about the end of the service of success. The other one I was trying to discussion was great. When the commission asked for three additional posts, is this in addition on the way to the 9 current commissioners? Because 2 have power, less than 1 passed away. I was thinking about 7 plus 3 which makes 10 or 9 plus 3 which makes 12. What are the financial implications? Because part of the constraint is budgetary constraints. And adding more commissioners, what is the justification of that? And of course, what processes and systems are talking about that is problematic for the commission within the SANDF? So if we know what's actually happening, the commission is finding difficulty. The other one is what's the actual issue with university educators and our professionals? Can we be more specific about what is the actual problem with them? The other one I've got is the issue of the LRA. I think the intervention there was to re-unionize, and that comment was even made by the president himself. That decision, of course, still lies with cabinet, and there was no finality on that. But the president did mention it, the previous minister mentioned that, and I think hearing now from the Green Service Commission, the matter is becoming an important matter as an essential service. So we need to have some idea of where this is going and if action will be taken in the district. The other one I want to just add is on the recruitment processes. There's a comment made that recruitment was slow because of the DMV systems that need to be followed. Now, if we then also just have an idea of what are the actually saying, how many months it really takes to afford people to put an advert out, to do the shorter thing, then to go through the committee phases, the three committees that may go through the selection process, and the final adjudication to appoint who actually qualifies for it. If we can just have an idea of how long does it take, and if it's necessary to take that long period to execute the appointment of qualified people. I think that is for the thank you very much.
Thanks. My last one is, you know, I need to do some justice here. I represent the person sector. Now, in your personal job taking commissioners, you don't think it would be a wise idea to get a commissioner from the disability sector who would assist the commission with members? And for your advantage, you won't have to headhunt very far.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, honorable chair. I will try to answer some of the questions. I will answer some of the questions, but I will also call on the commissioner to add wherever they feel is appropriate. Honourable Mania, what we have found on the basis, you found almost the same issues every base that you attend. One of the key issues that people will talk about, and this is what we as a mission found ourselves in as well, is structure. Every base complains about the structure. And the structure really impacts negatively on one's ability to be successful in executing your mandate. So that would be an issue. Members complain then that they are hired for a specific job, but because of shortage of staff, they now have to double up and do 2 or 3 jobs at the same time. And as you can imagine, this causes then hardship for the members, and it also impacts the quality of the service that they can then give. Another issue, recurring question, would be budget. The budget everywhere seems to be a problem, and it would affect their ability to solve vacancies in particular. If you want me to say more about that, or the other commissioners can say more. when we go to a place, remember, we have the breathing, we interface with every brain group, and we only see the men and women in uniform because that is our mandate. We've been criticized once in the newspaper for only looking at men and women in uniform, but for the actors, it's our mandate. And then we do touring of the facility. Accommodation is a major issue on all the bases, but it is not just the fact that there may perhaps not be accommodation for the people. It is also the state in which existing accommodation is that is the problem. And here the military, the defense force finds itself also in a little bit of a bind, and I know this firsthand because of my previous experience. The Department of Public Works is responsible for this part of the work. And commanders will say to us, they have submitted requests for improvement, but it's not happening. We have found, I think, infantry, for instance, where there is a partnership, a public-private partnership that could exist to build houses. But the issue of communication, the issue of getting the authority, the turnaround time for these things is just not happening. So we've heard of sad cases, I must say, that we have brought to the minister's attention. For instance, we have had members, women members, who will say to us, I had to leave my place in, let's say, I had to leave Mitchell Plain, and I'm now transferred to Pretoria. But I'm transferred to, there's no accommodation for me. Or the only accommodation for me is a single place where only I can live. I'm a single mother, I have two children behind me in a drug infested area. I cannot concentrate on them. Same thing with people crying for. So accommodation is a huge problem. The other problem would be how promotions, transfers are handled. Members confirm to us. Now I must say these are allegations, right? But members have a perception that there's nepotism, there's favoritism. Some of these things are being set up by the members. What this commission does, when we come back, we try and get a request briefing from the particular service chief on some of the issues that we have come. So we keep them abreast of what is wrong, to give them a fair chance of responding back to us. Then we also send the report to the minister. But beyond that, the commission's hands are really tight. We found issues of transport of this problem. We find that some of our members live in informal settlements. And that, if you look at informal settlements in the Western Cape, I can talk about. When we have the flood season, you expect the members to have shiny boots and a round iron suit or get into trouble. And that's the nature of mother thing. But the conditions under which the member lives doesn't support the member easily to be able to be the disciplined professional soldier that we expect. So some of the things are sad that we experience. But I must say that the relationship between us and the defense force hierarchy has improved greatly. The chief of the SNDF allows me even to have informal coffee sessions with him where I can bring, and I appreciate these. So we as a commission cannot complain about the support we have been given up to date. When we call the higher ups, they respond and they come and appear before the commission, and we have briefings from them. I think, let me just check with Ms. McLaughlin.
Yes.
You have your mic.
Thank you. The most serious complaint that he was scared to be security on the building. The uniform member was complaining that they do not have the right to secure their basis, and at the same time they don't even have fencing around there, and civilians can walk in and out and even steal from their offices. And another complaint is the MSDS. The MSDS, they complain that they get recruited, get training for 2 years, and most of them they have to be removed and they become reserves. And becoming a reserve does not guarantee them that they get jobs outside. And therefore, they end up having this military skill which they say they can utilize them to commit crime. Tools of trade, that's a common thing also. But the tools of trade are old, and they even mean that they should get new ones. The issue of procurement also, that is very slow. And therefore, if they are asking for food, for example, a uniform, it takes years for them to get out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But by and large, Chair, you know, HR issues, undertaking issues, issues of sympathy, and accommodation, really important factors. We are talking about MSD, but I think what is lacking is the upfront recruitment of MSD. That explains to me what exactly what they aim for, what, how long the term is, and what will happen after it. You see, many of them, of course, can't follow up their careers in the defense force because the intake is so much as some of them are going to be trained, others are not going to be trained. That is the actual policy we did, was started some years ago, with some of my knowledge. And I don't think there is sufficient upfront explanation there. And this is one thing that is required. And we have found people who are fearful of the issue in terms of their being kicked out of the system, being impaired, and they're not sure. And I was really glad the other day to see the 2,000 that we're taking, the army is taking 1,500 here for so many, and so on, and they're playing the areas armed of service, armed of service, such as what you call the formations and so on. And, but if the point is to get the skills that they need, even when they are finally when the tour of duty is complete. Because the real purpose is to provide them with some sort of skill. And so that when they do go out there, so these tough skills sell to the outside world. And that is, some of them are not particularly happy about it because they are self, they have been used in menial positions, photocopying and things like that. But I just have to give you really an example of what's taking place. But the concerns of the by and large for us has been very kind of open that you meet face to face with the categories of the detention. And I think the important thing is to be listening for them, half of them, you know, to be able to get them to speak their mind. And this is our skill. Sometimes it takes a bit of coaxing us from the chairs to get them to speak. But once they get started, that's what we look forward to. In the end, it's not so much that they discussed the trust, they talked about the lower and put in. Obviously, I was on the other side. It didn't particularly mean that for me. It's just that to have this objective condition where there is tension between the higher and the lower, something which can be mitigated, a hard thing to handle by the seed within the unit of faith. Now, and I think the chair has gone out of a way to speak to the in the debriefing moments after the visit. And I think this is an important element of the visit, is that at the debriefing, the mission brings attention to the Mali conferences of the situation, because they are in a position to confide their position. What you know is lacking. And from that point of view, I think this seems an action that the mission has lost a great deal to listen to the change. And I think this was kind of so there's something to talk about.
Before I wrap up on this issue of what we find on the basis chain, if I can just bring your attention, our mandate is that we have to look at regular thought and the reserve. So we mustn't make the reserve thought members invisible. The reserve thought members, if you look at the statistics, one would think that you can be perhaps from a transformation point of view happy if you look at the statistics, because it shows a bulk of reserve force being black. But if you unpack the statistics, what do you find? That most of those members are at the very lowest level in the reserve. Now, why is this an important thing to know? It is important because the call-up of these members is restricted. They sit and they wait for the call-up. They are often the breadwinners of the family. And if they don't get called up, which happens for most of the year, they don't have employment. So I think we really need to understand this issue of the redevelopment. Another aspect that I think we cannot escape is what are the verbalizations of the MSDs. You must take into consideration that they are the youth. And if we look at the statistics, the youth are in the trouble. And what we pick up on these places is a restlessness by the young people, whether they are in class or whether they are from the regular pool. I think we really do need to be careful that we look after the well-being, because that is part of our mandate, is to look after the well-being of our members. So I just want to bring this before this committee, that this is our concern to the mission. The call-out, the length of period that these people are unemployed. And when we come on to VACA, and I send this kindly not to embarrass anybody, we openly bring this to the chief, we bring it to our minister, so what I'm saying to you is not to discuss. But it is not, we don't want to hear what we sometimes hear. And sometimes we hear the MSG is accused, the defense force, of training them with skills and pushing them out into the society where they have no work, but they have skills that they can manipulate if the need would support them. Now we have to appreciate the honesty of the young people, and I think we have to listen, and we have to see, can we do something about this situation? because they don't just say this to be funny. They say this because they truly want to be soldiers and they want to have a job. So this is what we would like to bring to your attention, that something that we would have to look at. How do we utilize the reserve? Especially the bulk of them at the very lowest level. Now, if I move on to the other question, the organizational structure, Honorable Member Bongo, yes, I'm happy that you can see that this is a big problem for us. It is just not working. And we are quite far in the process with Germany. But I have to say to you that whether we will get the new request through and approved is of course debatable. But we have already on the table a proposed structure. I don't think there is a problem in letting you have a copy of what the proposal is about at the moment. Even if it's just the one sheet, because what we find is that sometimes the people in the defense force, we still have to teach them that the commission is different. They want to treat us like a military unit. Now they first want to take this thing to GPDEC before they want to comply with some of this. But we can use the one table along on the proposed question. The additional commissioners, full-time, that is really our weak chairperson. It will help the chair, the current chair, if I can have perhaps at least two more full-time commissioners. And the commissioners, I must say that really our weak look at where we are close, that is also a problem in a hierarchical organization like the SNB. For me to be able to call a lieutenant general is not an easy task, given my level. But it's a bad thing for good relationships. One could fail, but we do have good relationships, so they come. The structure of the secretariat, the overall care, the sooner it can happen, the better. So any support from the direction will help. In terms of Honorable Member Gisel, thank you also for your praise, my dear Commissioner, here for our work done today. I think we are in the same position as the military countries in terms of the report, because we have to report to Minister. But it's something that we can certainly discuss with the Minister, we can take away from here and see what we can do about that, especially in terms of future visits. We do make, provide the Minister with a copy of every report of the advisor when it is ready.
The
union? So we, for most of the time, being operating, actually, there was seven commissioners. The Act requires of us to have six commissioners in order to form a quorum, operating. That's proven to be a problem. Because two of the commissioners are in full-time employment in government, and it's difficult for them. They are senior people because they look for so-called esteemed people for the commission. Very good commissioners, but they can't sit off often because of their own duty. So we sit with the position that we have to have these meetings and we implement the decision to become problematic. So there's the additional three people. We, I think, can strengthen our capacity, can make room for us to be courageous more regularly. In terms of cost, it would then mean that there's this extra cost of one commission because we were nine originally. That's seven plus one. The issue of the union get told, are you replacing the Malaysian union? And even when we do the consultative visit, there may be members who are members of the union who will post that question to us. The approach we take is that per our constitution, all South Africans have the right of freedom to association. That is the stand of the commission. So we are saying that people have the right to belong to a military union if they so wish. But of course, we also believe that if our recommendation can be endorsed, can be implemented, perhaps there will be less of need for members to have to run to unions and go the way of the court. We believe that none of these issues are so that they cannot be dealt with internally. So we are hoping to get there as a commission. I can tell you, sir, that when we call for the briefings, they are not easy on the issues of their recommendations when they come before. You can imagine also somebody like General Olamita, he can be quite straightforward. But we take our mandate serious and we really get to them. Now in terms of the university education, and we have to say that we've been to a number of training institutions that you can see there. There are a lot of problems vis-a-vis the curriculum. Especially we found a certain mouth school. This is where you train the HR people for the division. It is a very big problem that perhaps we need to work much harder as a commission to get that trained. Very often the staff is not equipped fully to deal with the curriculum. We find the courses are not accredited so that the members feel not very encouraged. We find also that the age at which members are sent for courses is problematic. Sometimes it's a 5-year-old who seems to be retired and is now sent on course. So we find often constraints about, in terms of promotion, if they can't get to course with the younger members, then they are stuck because their, you know, salaries are tied to their rent. So these are some of the issues that we find. Also classroom. If you want to be, for instance, take the military academy, if you want to be a national athlete, then we have to understand that we interact with the world now. You want cutting-edge research. You want cutting-edge facilities in order to educate your members properly. So these are some of the concerns, of course, the vacancies, yeah. And I say to you, especially in a special field, at Malaysia Academy you can go find, maybe in nautical science, or, so there is sometimes difficult to find the right person. Now they get appointed, but they have to wait 7-8 months before they get that letter to say that they have been appointed. When you go back to them, they've already got a new job. And they're the OS people for university educators. From our desk, we have made the recommendations that have been implemented, but we've also said that it should be for all other Malaysian university educators in the system. Minister has now sent that back to human resources. And I can also report to this committee that HR in Dava did come about, which we participated in, and where they got all the HR practitioners, because as General said, that is a major, major problem. They got all the HR practitioners and commanders. General Almanita and myself made a presentation there as well. So they have undertaken to look at these things and see what improvements are coming. But the OSG for health professionals and for educators in the province, we recently had a group of oral health practitioners who asked to appear before the commission to raise their dissatisfaction or the implementation of the OSG. I can also maybe say to you, in terms of the military ombuds, when we come onto a base, we try to educate the members that we are not there for the individual grievances, but we do take submissions that is of a collective nature. That we do. So we make it very clear that we don't step onto the territory of the military members. And we educate them that grievances like that, there's a command and control function. I hope I've covered. Oh, in terms of the disability services, you are so right. I think by law, even the temple that has a 2%, we recently called for a briefing from HR on the issue of hiring people with disabilities, and we were given a report. But thank you for bringing that to the level of the commission as well.
Just to give you one of the ideas that was raised on the Christian children, how long it takes in the DUD. It depends on, I think, in the uniform section, it's fairly fixed before each and people see the upper rate, you know, normally people post the forces and they promote these positions that are taken by and large. I mean, the PSEP side of things is more complicated. It's a long time for people finding to be appointed in the organization. It's like, you quite sure it takes anything 3, 4, 6 months before, depending, you know, it even be more intense. But that's about the length of time it takes. One whole question of going through the selection, the pre-selection, then there is the selection board and the subsequent.
I think what we have to understand is the nature of the defense force. That forces are in the situation of security clearance, it's vetting, etc., that must be done. And that process can also take very long. So it is quite challenging at all levels. I must also say to you that the commission would not have survived without the help of detached members from the reserve force and the FNDA. They've been really helpful in deepening the understanding of the commissioners and even helping the secretariat to execute their members. We monitor that regularly. There's about 3 that we say must be answered by the minister, and the rest we write to the FNDF. How we keep an eye on monitoring is to call them for briefing to get the latest update. So for Jordan or for them, for instance, we just got a new update from the general of the formation, and unfortunately not much positive news can be received. But that is how we keep an eye on trying to get them to work on what it is that we are recommending. I must say some improvement has come about, so we have seen an improvement.
Thank you very much for all these exchange, and thank you to all the members. thanks to the commission for making time. We are going to do a follow-up reading and make time on the issues that have been raised. We'd like to have the report back to update and so forth. Thanks very much to the humble and the team Mandy. Mandy, there is no item also that this is in the room. With no better business to do the meeting, but thank you.
Thank you.